Are you looking for ways to attract and retain private pay clients? Thrizer is a payment platform for therapists built to help clients automatically tap into their out-of-network benefits and save on therapy up front. Check out our special link, join.thrizer.com/modern therapist, and use the code modernTherapists to activate $2,500 in free payments with Thrizer.
Therapy Notes, the number one trusted EHR among mental health professionals, just keeps getting better and better. With legendary customer support 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, they're giving you all the tools you need to succeed, whether you're a solo clinician or a group practice. Try them free for 2 months using promo code MODERN today.
You're listening to the Modern Therapist Survival Guide, where therapists live, breathe, and practice as human beings. To support you as a whole person and a therapist, here are your hosts, Kurt Widhelm and Katie Vernoy.
Welcome back, Modern Therapists. This is the Modern Therapist Survival Guide. I'm Kurt Widhelm with Katie Vernoy, and this is the podcast for therapists about the things that go on in our fields, venturing into parts of our education that we barely touch on or don't touch on whatsoever. And in all of the years that we've been podcasting and all of the years of my experience as we were preparing for today's episode, I was like, this is something that I don't think was covered in any of my formal education. And we are so lucky to have Dr. Sharon Malone come in and share all of her wonderful knowledge around the ways that menopause, perimenopause show up in our work, the things that we should understand as clinicians on how this affects our clients. And we're just super excited to have you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I am so excited. I've been listening to some of the podcast interviews you've done and interviews you've done on TV, and just really excited to learn this information. As I mentioned before we hit record, I am officially perimenopausal, so some of this is very self-serving and definitely something where I'm really excited to learn, because when I started going through this myself a couple years ago, I realized there was nothing that was being talked about. There was, I would try to ask people in my life and they didn't know or didn't remember. And so this is something that you are focusing your energy on. So I'm going to turn this over to you with the question that we ask all of our guests. Who are you and what are you putting out into the world?
Yes. As I said, thank you for having me. This is my favorite topic, by the way. And for those of you who don't know me, my name is Dr. Sharon Malone. I am an OBGYN board certified, and I'm also a national menopause practitioner. And what that means is that for probably the second half of my career, in addition to my other gynecology duties, I spend a lot of time talking to women in perimenopause and menopause. And it also means that I've had, special training and, actually been certified in this as a sort of a sub area of gynecology. But let me tell you why it's so important. It's because, women in midlife have really been sort of left out there to their own devices. And I think that, as OBGYNs, we have been a little bit, I would say we're a little bit complicit in that, because we do a lot of stuff as OBGYNs. And I don't think that there's another field in medicine that does as many things over as many different age ranges as OBGYNs do. We are, on any given day, a primary care doctor. You're a therapist. You are, providing counseling for contraception. You're getting women successfully through pregnancy. And by the time we get to midlife, after we've dealt with some of the other gynecologic issues, we're, everyone feels like, okay, we're done with that. And let me just say, perimenopause and menopause are life stages. They're not events. It's not like you're going to get over it and then we're on to the next thing. And I think that the more women know going into this phase of life, the better prepared you are. And I tell you, there would be no other phase. Imagine if you entered puberty with as little information as women enter perimenopause and menopause. You would think that there was really something wrong with you. Because there are not just the physical changes, there are psychological changes that happen as well, and we're ill prepared for them. So what I'm putting out in the world, I am trying to get women educated such that they know what to expect when they get to this point of life. I want them to also know what their options are, such that when they interact with their medical providers or with their therapist, they have at least the thought in mind that maybe this is not something that's isolated. It is just all part of that continuum that we women will call the rest of our lives.
What is it that you think that mental health providers should know about some of the psychological effects that you're talking about when it comes to menopause?
Absolutely. The one thing that I think every mental health provider should know is that perimenopause, in addition to the myriad of physical symptoms that women have, you know, estrogen, which is the primary driver of a lot of the symptoms that show up in perimenopause. And in perimenopause, let me just explain to you, those are the years leading up to menopause, which means just having had your last period. And that average age is 51. So anywhere from a decade prior to having had your last menstrual period, these perimenopausal years, the hormonal shifts that are going on during that phase, they're more tumultuous. It's not because it's lack of estrogen. That happens after you've completed menopause. It is this erratic nature of hormones, sometimes overshooting, sometimes undershooting, that is really wreaking havoc on your brain. Not just on your physical body, you know, it's not just a reproductive hormone. And I think that's what I want women to understand. You know, we all know in our heart of hearts, even without one day of medical training, that women, where you are in your hormonal spectrum really affects what your mood is like on any given day. Women feel different the week before their period than they do after their period. You feel different in pregnancy. You know, you notice that there is an increase in postpartum depression because of, again, these rapid hormonal shifts. So what therapists should understand that during this period of transition, it is a period of time where you also see an uptick in depression, anxiety, sleeplessness. I mean, all sorts of mood disorders really start to come up during that time. And what I want everyone to understand is that it's not isolated. So the solution to how to treat a perimenopausal woman has to be crafted within the context of knowing that it is a hormonal issue. It's not just an isolated psychological issue. So, you know, a depression or anxious mood at this point sometimes may involve treatment with hormone therapy as opposed to an antidepressant or an anxiolytic.
How would you recommend doing kind of a differential there as a clinician? Because I know for myself, I can only speak from my own experience. I've had some of the mood shifts. I've had some of those things, but there's also kind of the brain fog. There's the right. the different physiological things that can be very anxiety producing. And then there's also just the things of life and the things that may be more kind of straight ahead, depression, anxiety, you know, all of those things. So what's the differential that you would recommend for therapists to do?
Well, you know, that's the one thing that it's really not terribly difficult to tease apart. But I do have to say that perimenopause couldn't happen at a worse time in women's lives, you know,
oh, for sure.
There's a lot going on. You know, you've got, for most of us, you know, you have careers, you're just sort of hitting your stride. You know, you've got probably the most responsibility professionally you've ever had. So you've got work stress. You have, many of us still have young children in the home. So you've got young children to deal with. You have elderly parents sometimes that you're dealing with. So all of life sort of comes in at this point, and it's the perfect storm for a lot of mental health issues that come up. And when you add to that this hormonal shift, you know, I think the best way that you can sort of differentiate is that if you have a woman who is between the ages of 40 and sometimes even earlier 30s, mid-30s, but if you're between the ages of 40 and 50, and you have no prior history of any other, you know, you don't have an anxiety disorder, you don't have a pre-existing condition, and all of a sudden this comes up, the first thing you should think about is really perimenopause and hormonal shifts, because you know, again, that's the first thing, and it's the easiest thing to fix. When you fix, when you try to deal with the mental health issues, you really have to delve a little bit deeper and to ask about some of the other physical manifestations of perimenopause. And if you have two or more data points that connect, then chances are, you know, at least perimenopause has to be at the top of your list of your differential. And certainly people can get depression and anxiety. And there's also another common complaint that women have is sort of late onset ADHD, you know, and that part of it comes in. And let me say that we are having a little bit of a moment now, and I say a good one, in understanding the changes, the remodeling of your brain that happens during perimenopause. And Dr. Lisa Moscone, brilliant neuroscientist at Weill Cornell, has written two books, and her latest one is called The Menopause Brain, where she actually, you know, she has pictures that will show women in premenopause, in perimenopause, and postmenopause. And she's doing PET scans to see that not only, you know, for people who said it's all in your head, of course, it's all in your head. All of it's in your head. But she's got pictures to prove it, that your brain looks different in perimenopause, metabolically it's different, physically it's changing, and it's got to remodel and adjust to this new hormonal environment that you're in. And so that's where I say, you know, for age matters, you know, if someone comes to you at 65 and they come in with these new onset things, well, perhaps I wouldn't think of a hormonal issue, but it is probably the most common and the most underdiagnosed reason for why women come in with these anxiety disorder, new onset anxiety disorder, irritability, rage, brain fog. And brain fog is very scary for women because they think, oh my goodness, this is something. Is this a harbinger of things to come? And it's not. It's just your brain trying to get reorganized, you know, in response to the changing hormones.
As a male in society, I recognize that this is not something that comes up in casual conversation between me and my friends. In my practice, I work particularly with teens, and so this is not a clinical part of my practice that I end up seeing a lot. But as my practice does expand sometimes, I want to be aware of any myths that might be out there about menopause, perimenopause, in case I or any of our listeners are like, hey, this is something that maybe we need to point to. All of the wonderful things that you just shared as being factual, but what are some of the myths that are out there that we need to be aware of too?
You know, I think the biggest myth or misconception that women in general have is that it's short. You know, if I just power through this for a couple of weeks, couple of months, it's going to be over and I will be over it. And what I'm trying to get women to understand is that even though some of the tumult that you experience during perimenopause will settle down, you're never over it. It is, as I said, it's a phase of life. And the other thing is that I would like women to know is that if you are experiencing these symptoms, get them treated. There's no, you don't get a bonus point at the end for having suffered, you know, for months, years, and in sometimes even a decade. There's no benefit in that. So, you know, we've got to get rid of that superwoman mentality that if, you know, we just power through, it will be okay. There's a tremendous price that we pay physically, and there's a tremendous price that we pay psychologically for not addressing the issues that we have in midlife.
Thrizer is a payment platform designed for out-of-network therapy. As a therapist, you would use Thrizer to charge clients for sessions and collect your full rate upfront. From the client's perspective, Thrizer links to their health plan, so insurance claims are automatically submitted for them upon every charge. From there, Thrizer manages the claims end-to-end so that your clients don't have to worry about manually submitting super bills or getting on calls with insurance. The best part? Thrizer allows clients to only pay their co-insurance portion for sessions, while Thrizer covers the rest of your fee and waits for reimbursement on their behalf.
They also offer you an instant benefits calculator for free, allowing you to provide upfront transparency to prospective clients on their out-of-network coverage. Therapists only pay a standard 3% credit card processing fee per session with no additional fees. Visit join.thriser.com/modern therapist to get started and use our promo code Modern Therapists to receive $2,500 in waived fees for your sessions. What does really good menopause, perimenopause treatment look like? And maybe for some of our listeners who aren't going through it like I am, some of the physical manifestations that they might be able to treat.
Right. And for those who may not know what the physical manifestations are, the most commonly associated symptom is really hot flashes. So there's hot flashes, there's mood swings, anxiety, depression, brain fog, there's dry skin, there's thinning hair, there's dry vaginas, there's painful sex, there's a feeling as if something is crawling under your skin. I mean, the list goes on and on. So that combination of things, of which you may have one from column A and two from column B, and sometimes you don't stitch them together. Women complain of weight gain. There is a weight gain thing that happens in perimenopause. And mostly it's redistribution of weight that is problematic. So even women who don't gain weight during perimenopause will find that there's a shift. It sort of goes more to the middle, right where you don't want it. So yep. Like that. All of these things, and let me just say, if you have 1, 2, 10 of the symptoms, the most effective treatment for the symptoms of menopause is estrogen or menopausal hormone therapy. End of sentence. If you have those symptoms, you can try, you know, a lot of times what happens for women, they will see a dermatologist because of skin problems or thinning hair. They'll see an endocrinologist because they're gaining weight. They may see a psychiatrist because they're feeling depressed, and their care really gets parceled out. But no one is really looking at the big picture of saying, you know what? All of these things sort of go together. And that's why seeing someone who at least recognizes what's going on, even if you personally cannot treat it, you can at least send them to someone to say, oh, perhaps this is something you should address. And here's another interesting piece of information about treating mental health issues during perimenopause and menopause, is that what we found is that even when an antidepressant or an SSRI is appropriate for treating depression, the effect of having estrogen and an SSRI or an antidepressant together, the estrogen potentiates the effect of the SSRI. So even for women who are depressed, if the estrogen isn't working, and if you have to add an SSRI or whatever antidepressant you're using, that's helpful. But the two together are not antagonistic, they're synergistic. So that's also some information that some news you can use about treating mood disorders. But as I said, treating the physical symptoms does have a profound effect on mental symptoms. And what do I mean by that? If you have hot flashes, if you have night sweats, you're not sleeping, you are irritable the next day, you've got foggy brain the next day. People who don't get good night's sleep tend to increase their risk of hypertension. It increases your weight gain because, again, you don't make good choices when you've had 3 hours of sleep the next day.
For sure.
Increases your risk of type 2 diabetes, which just means that the more unwell you feel physically is going to make you feel unwell mentally. You don't exercise. All of the things that we know to do that do help with mood, if you don't address the physical symptoms, then you're going to make the mood and whatever else you're feeling worse.
There's been some controversy around using hormones. And I know that that's something where my understanding of it is that there was a study that was overstated about the risks of hormones. Can you address that?
Yes. And you know what? I can address this as being the old person in the room because I was there before. I was treating menopause before the Women's Health Initiative. And this was this famous study that came out. It will be 22 years this July.
Wow.
22 years ago, that really fundamentally changed how we prescribed hormones and our attitudes about hormones. And that was a study that really cemented in everyone's minds that association between hormones and breast cancer. Well, it turns out that that's really probably not true and very overblown. But the point of that study, for those of you who may not know, it was a study that was, it was the largest randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled study, which is the gold standard whenever you're trying to prove something and its effectiveness. The study was designed not to answer the question of whether or not hormones worked. We knew that. We had had 50 years of using hormones. We knew it worked for symptoms. And we had some studies, some fairly significant observational studies before the Women's Health Initiative that said that not only did hormone therapy treat the symptoms, but it decreased the risk of heart disease by 30 to 50%, which was huge.
Wow.
If you could take a medication and it would decrease your risk of heart disease, well, my goodness, every woman should be on it, right? Because heart disease is the number one killer of women then and now. So the study was not designed to prove the effectiveness of hormones or to see whether it worked. It was designed for the sole purpose of seeing, does this observed finding of decreased risk of heart disease, can we prove it with this study? That was what it was about. Now, you might say, well, that's laudable. But here's the problem with the study design, and they didn't realize it at the time. Because women don't get an uptick in heart disease until about 10 years after they've completed menopause. So when you see women having heart attacks and strokes, it's mainly happening in their 60s, not in their 50s, when women are typically prescribed hormones. So they designed the study such that it would be more women who were older. The average age of the participants in those in that study was 63. You could be anywhere from 50 to 79 and be in the study. And because the study was only going to last 8 years, they wanted to include women who were kind of already on the road to heart disease. And that's why this, you know, they picked the study. And because it's a double blind study, they couldn't pick women who had a lot of symptoms, because if you had hot flashes and I gave you a placebo and you still had hot flashes, you would know, oh, I'm not on the medication, and vice versa. And so the population that they chose was not representative of who we normally prescribed hormones for. That was the fatal flaw of that study. And the problem was, because the patients were so much older, and let me say this, as we say, it's a classic case of closing the barn door after the horse is already out. How are you going to do a prevention study when you've got someone who's 75 entering your study? Her heart disease risk is pretty much solidified at that point, no matter what you do, hormones or no hormones. So net result is it didn't decrease the risk of heart disease as they expected. But the real reason why the study was stopped was because they saw a slight increase in the risk of breast cancer. And that was the end all of the Women's Health Initiative. And that's what prompted the big press conference. Because if your two top lines is that it doesn't decrease your risk of heart disease, as we thought, and it's going to give you breast cancer, why would anybody take it? That prevailing thought has lasted for 22 years. Until finally someone says, you know what, that's not really what the study said. How can you extrapolate the results from a much older population, much higher risk population, that you couldn't prevent heart disease even if you wanted to the population of women who are younger? And the good news is that when we look at women who started either before age 60 or within 10 years of when they've actually had their last menstrual period, the benefits far outweigh the risks. And it turns out that that decrease in the risk of heart disease does matter. It happens, it matters when you take it. So for younger women, the risks are much lower. There is no increased risk in breast cancer for women who start early. That's also the good news. So, but you know how it is? It's hard to unring a bell.
Yeah.
And there is not only women who were disadvantaged during this time. There's a generation of doctors who've grown up in this period who think the same thing. And I think the most pernicious effect is that it has affected research into hormone therapy negatively for the past 21 years because people stopped studying. There are a lot of other questions that we have that we need to know the answers to. But if no one looks at it, then, you know, what is the effect of estrogen on Alzheimer's? Pretty important to know. And had we had 30 years of data, which we would have had by now had the study not been stopped, we'd be able to answer some of those questions. So that's why it's so important that research like Dr. Moscone's doing at Weill Cornell is important, because she's looking at it in a much shorter time frame. You know, we don't have 30 years now to do that, to redo that study, to find out what's going to happen. But to be able to look at a brain, not over 30 years, but to even watch a woman as she transitions. So, you know, maybe 10 years, 5 years of what's happening to your brain is important, because now we can see it. Now we can see it.
Do you see this showing up in people of all backgrounds, or do you see this in women of color show up differently than kind of the broader populations?
Absolutely. You know, there is probably nothing in medicine that the disparity of race does not rear its ugly head, but not for the reasons you think. The disparity that we see in menopause is probably more due to the lived conditions of a lot of African-American women. It is about those social determinants of health that Black women are experiencing. It's not your DNA, it's your environment for probably 95% of the things that Black women experience. And so, yes, for Black women, there's a study that was done, an observational study called the Study of Women Across the Nation, which they actually just followed a cohort of women over 25 years just to watch them as they progressed from perimenopause through menopause, just to see what does it look like. And they found that for African-American women, we tend to experience menopause earlier, you know, about a year earlier than white women. The symptoms which we normally associate with menopause, hot flashes, mood flash, all that list of 30 things, Black women tend to have them more severely. And they last longer. So if I tell you that period of perimenopause lasts anywhere on average from 4 to 7 years, for Black women, that lasts 10 years. Now, that's a long time to have all of these things that we know negatively affect your performance, the quality of your health, your mental health. And so, yes, we have got to look at it that way, but not just from, you know, from a race perspective, but to also look at it from the perspective of Black women are least likely to be aware of the fact that these things are perimenopausal and can be treated easily. Even when they complain and they go see their doctors, they are only half as likely to get a prescription, even when they complain about hormone therapy. And when they get the prescription, they take it home, they're only half as likely to take it. And that's because of so many of the negative perceptions out there about hormone therapy. So you have a population who is most at risk, who's least likely to even complain or have, you know, to their doctor. And when they do, less likely to get a prescription and less likely to take it, which again has very severe long-term health implications for women of color.
Not only does Therapy Notes combine billing, scheduling, notes, secure messaging, group telehealth, and more into one streamlined platform, they're also always adding new features and forms to their library. So no matter your specialty, Therapy Notes has you covered.
Learn more at therapynotes.com and use promo code MODERN for 2 months free. For folks who are going to the doctor, and whether, you know, we use the kind of popular phrase medical gaslighting or just ignorance from the doctor. Mm-hmm. How do you recommend that they approach that differently? Because I think for myself as a therapist, I want to be able to first arm myself, but I also want to make sure I can talk to the women that I see as clients and say, like, how can we approach doctors or find the right doctors?
Right. I think that and this is really one of the reasons that I wrote my book, Grown Woman Talk, was to really arm women and to give them the information that they need, such that when you walk in the door, you aren't necessarily just asking for their opinion. You know, you've done your reading, you've done a little homework, so you know what this means. You know what, you know, you sometimes you have to tell your doctor what's wrong with you. You can't wait for them to explain it to you. You're like, I got it. I've read this. I give you all the, as we say, I give you all the receipts, such that when you walk in, you have a pretty good idea of what it is you want. You have a pretty good idea of what your options are. And then you can just discuss those. You don't have to start from square one. Tell me about menopause or tell me about perimenopause or what do you think this might be? You're there. And let me say, this concept of going into your doctor and asking for the medications that you want or need, that's not a new concept. I think every time you see a medication advertised on TV, they are betting on the fact that you will see this and walk into your doctor and tell your doctor that you want that medication. But why don't we do that for women? Why don't we empower women or explain to them this is why this may be important for you and may and certainly will improve the quality of your life for symptomatic women? We sort of are still living in that world of being very paternalistic when it comes to women's care. And I have believed and I have practiced this way for the past 30 years. I think that once you give women information, and my job is not to say, here's the information, you decide. No, my job as a physician is to give you information, give you pros and cons. I will give you an opinion because that's what you pay for. You know, I'm not just going to say, otherwise, what do you need me? I will help you. I'll help you make that decision and I will make a case. But nonetheless, unless you are doing something dangerous or completely crazy, I respect your decision. There may be women who say, yeah, I get it. Hormones, I've been waiting for this answer. And there are women that no matter I could talk from now until I'm blue in the face and they say, well, and I don't want to. And you know what my job is to say? Okay, I understand that. So let's figure out another way that we can minimize some of the symptoms and some of the long-term health implications that you have. That's my job. But my job is not to tell or withhold medication because I think I wouldn't do that. And, you know, let's just say there are a lot of aspects of women's health right now that we're dealing with where people are interjecting themselves into conversations about women's health and what decisions we make about our bodies. And that's got to go.
Yeah, for sure.
You've been talking about this a lot. You're very passionate about this. I'm sitting here learning about this a lot for the very first time, and it just makes sense. Like, you're talking about, you know, the last 20 years of kind of all of the myths and everything else that's out there. Since you've gotten up on your pedestal and really started shouting to the masses, are you seeing any kind of change in the field? Are you seeing a great response to this?
I'm seeing enormous response to this. And I think that women are grateful for the information. They are saying, my goodness, why didn't I know this? Why didn't somebody tell me this? And let me say, this is the beauty of telehealth. This is the beauty of social media, which sometimes there's good news and bad news about how social media hits in terms of information. I say there's a lot of data out there, but you can't really evaluate it for its utility because you don't know what's good data and what's bad data. But if you find respected sources that make sense, this is an opportunity for me to have the conversation that I've been having literally for 21 years since this study came out. And I've been trying to explain to women why, no, it didn't really say that, or that doesn't really apply to you. Well, I could talk one-on-one all day and I couldn't get to a fraction of the women that, you know, even this conversation will get to. So yes, I think that that's really important. I think that women are thirsty for this information. And let me say, and it's not just a, you know, it's not just women who are, oh, well, you're poorly educated or you're uninformed. This is across the board. Every room that I go into, it doesn't matter whether they're PhDs or social workers or, you know, cafeteria workers, the amount of information that women don't have could, you know, could fill a room. It's amazing. So I am passionate about it because I think that, again, we deserve to age healthfully. We deserve to go through our midlife. And let me say, we spend a lot of time talking about, you know, the bad things or the negative things that happen to women in midlife. I am here to tell you that midlife and beyond, and particularly once you're menopausal, I think that is where you have the opportunity to really live your best life. Once you are freed from a lot of the responsibilities that saddle you in midlife, all those things that we talked about. And now for the first time in life, you get to pay attention to you. I get to do what I want to do. That's a beautiful thing. So I think it's something that we have to reframe this conversation and have women understand that this is not something to dread. This is something really to look forward to. And anything and everything that you can do to make sure that you feel good and are functioning properly at this point in your life is something that you need to make sure that you put in your tool bag.
You've written a book that is part of this effort to get the word out. Can you tell us a little bit more about it?
Yes. I wrote my book. It's called Grown Woman Talk. And it's really not just about menopause and perimenopause. As a matter of fact, that's a sliver of the book. It really was born of the notion that I am the only doctor in my friend group, and I'm the only doctor in my family. So as such, I spend a lot of time navigating and negotiating people's various and sundry healthcare issues. And the recurring theme that keeps coming up, that kept coming up again and again, was how little people understand how the system even works. You know, and or I talk to someone and they would ask me a question and I would say, did your doctor not tell you that? I'm confused as to why you don't know that. And so the book is full of practical advice. There's some medical advice. There's a lot of storytelling because I think that that's really how we sort of absorb information. But it starts with things like how to pick a doctor. What's important? What's important about your medical history, your family history? So there's some logistical things that I think that people don't get because you have to understand the practice of medicine has changed. The locus of control now is not your doctor who's going to, your nice, wonderful doctor who's going to give you great advice for the next 25 or 30 years. That's not going to happen. You're in control of your health. And that's what that's the message I want to women to get. And for those of you who might remember, there's this book in the that was out in the 90s when I was having my children called What to Expect When You're Expecting.
Yep.
Well, this book is What to Expect When You Expect to Live Beyond 40. It's all
I love it.
Other things, you know, and then we talk about some things that happen that you might expect in midlife that may happen, fibroids, cancer, you know, high blood pressure, diabetes. We talk about those things, but ultimately it's to give you a navigational tool. And the earlier you read the book, the better. It's just like that window of opportunity. You know, there's never a time that it's a bad time to read it, but the earlier you are, when you see things coming and you're like, oh, well, that's not surprising. And you know how to prepare for it and what to do if and when these situations come up. So that's the book. And the book, sometimes I say, you know, we talk about some tough stuff when you talk about cancer and you're talking about Alzheimer's disease. But there, I hope that through storytelling, and I do tell a lot of stories, a lot of family stories, I try to interject a little humor from time to time. And in the text and at the end of each chapter, there's a playlist. So it has a musical accompaniment at the end. So oh,
that's amazing.
So when it feels like it's gotten a little tough, then you can just go and go to Spotify or Apple and listen to my playlist. And because I'm a closet DJ in my spare time.
That's amazing.
Where can people find your book and find out more about you and the things that you're doing?
Sure. You can follow me on Instagram. And my Instagram handle is smalonemd. My website is drsharonmalone.com. Go to my website, a lot of information about my book. And you can buy my book wherever books are sold. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Walmart, Target, every place. And all the links are provided in my website at drsharonmalone.com.
And we will include links to all of those in our show notes over at mtsgpodcast.com. Follow us on our social media. Join our Facebook group to continue on this conversation. And not only for our women clinicians, but also for all of our men out there, there's plenty of benefits to learning about what's going on with women in your life. So make sure that they listen to this episode as well. And until next time, I'm Kurt Woodhelm with Katie Vernoy and Dr. Sharon Malone. Remember to check out Thrizer. They are passionate about making out-of-network therapy work for everyone. Clients save upfront on therapy while therapists earn their full rate. Get started in minutes on join.thrizer.com/modern therapist and use the promo code Modern Therapists and receive $2,500 in waived fees for your sessions.
Thanks so much to our partner Therapy Notes, the highest rated practice management solution for behavioral health. Don't forget, using promo code MODERN gets you 2 free months.
Thank you for listening to the Modern Therapist Survival Guide. Learn more about who we are and what we do at mtsgpodcast.com. You can also join us on Facebook and Twitter. And please don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss any of our episodes.